Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard's co-director of charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
That is our holiday theme version of the Chartbeat Podcast theme.
Gary's wanted to give it a little touch up. I appreciate that.
Fits into this week's Billboard Hot 100's Top 10. So coming up on the podcast, a special guest. Actually, we're going to go back to Nashville for an interview with Lindsay L., who's rising on Billboard's country charts. Our country correspondent in Nashville, Jim Asker, is going to be interviewing Lindsay. So that's coming up. But Christmas on the charts this week, Mariah Carey.
Comes a little early.
Yeah. 23 years in the making.
Comes really late.
Top 10 for All I Want for Christmas Is You in the top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100 this week. Let's hear this week's top 10 on the Hot 100, and we'll talk about it.
10, 9, 8, 7. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Number 10. Number 9. Number 8. I'm bad at love. But you can't blame me for trying. You know I'd be lying, saying, you're the one. Number 7. I'm way too good at goodbye. I'm way too good at goodbye. Number 6.
Put that thing in sports. Shout it bad. Papa like a court, poppy, you a dork, never been a sport, dork, pull up, jumping out the court.
Number 5.
Thunder, feel the thunder, lightning and the thunder, thunder, feel the thunder, lightning.
Number 4.
Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang. Spent the race on new chain. My bitch love do cocaine. Ooh, I fuck a bitch, I forgot name. Yeah, I can't buy no been away.
Number 3.
Just graduated fresh on
campus. Number 2.
I've been fucking hoes and popping pillies, man. I feel just like a rock star. All my brothers got that gas and they always be smoking like a rock star.
And number 1.
On the grass, while listening to our favorite song. When I saw you in that dress, looking so beautiful, I don't deserve.
And there we have it once again. 2 weeks for the two superstars on Perfect, the song that is the number one track on the Hot 100 for a second week in a row. Ed Sheeran, Beyonce, bringing home the bacon once again. The song, you know, it's one of those times we get to that sort of sleepy part of the year where the album release schedule kind of lightens up. Not as many tracks dropping. People don't want things to get lost in the shuffle of the holidays. Could be one of those things where we've got a number one that'll last for three, four, five, a good number of weeks in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, airplay is still building. Some momentum looks really good. And yeah, if nothing else is coming up at the moment, could be something to take us into January.
And one other element that could help Perfect hang on for a couple weeks is the songs right beneath it at the top of the chart really starting to either slow down or scale back a little bit. We've got Rockstar at number two, as you guys heard, had been number one for 8 weeks. Now we see it slowly ticking back a little bit, streams dropping a little bit. Behind that, Havana number three, and even though it's the top radio song this week, seems like the momentum is starting to shift back a little bit. Really the first challenger on the up and coming side seems at number six, as you guys heard, the song Motorsport by the trifecta, I guess maybe the quintfecta. Well,
it's a trio who's now in another trio.
Part of a trio.
Right.
It's like a meta trio,
right,
of Migos, who is the trifecta all its own, and Cardi B and Nicki Minaj. So they're moving up to number six this week on the Hot 100, really driven by the first full tracking week we have since the music video for the song came out, the little futuristic clip if you haven't seen it. The streams for that lifting it up into the top five of the streaming songs chart this week, and that is definitely driving it up into the top 10 of the Hot 100 for the first time.
And a historic week for Cardi B.
And yes, Cardi is making, speaking of trifectas, Cardi is now claiming a trifecta all her own. Her first three Hot 100 hits are all now top 10s officially. Bodak Yellow, as you guys know, was a number one hit earlier in the fall this year. A song that you just heard also in that countdown, No Limit, G-Eazy with Cardi B and A$AP Rocky. Still in the top 10 this week, had peaked at number 7 thus far. And now with Motorsport, Cardi is 1, 2, 3. She's killing the game out here.
Yeah, first female rapper ever to take her first three Hot 100 hits to the top 10, ever.
So that's not Missy, not MC Light, not DeBrett, not Iggy. If you haven't read the story that our pal Xander wrote on Billboard, Lil Mama also going 2 for 2 out there back in 2007. Yes, lip gloss. Remember that one?
It's like at least the second or third time you've mentioned that title on the podcast.
Lip gloss?
Yeah.
Y'all don't know. Lil Mama put out something that is culturally relevant. Y'all wrote dismissed it when it first came off as a little novelty pop song. 10 years later, we are still talking about lip gloss.
All right. So the other song in the top 10 this week that is maybe the most notable just for how long it took to get to the top 10, Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas Is You, up to number 9.
I wish I could make a lamb noise. I can make a goat noise, but like we need to put in a lamb sound here.
Here we go.
Bah.
Just happened to have a lamb with us right here in the studio.
We'll have to dive into that could be our flashback, is where did the lamb-ally come from?
All right. We'll feed the lamb, keep it over there so we can come back at the end of the podcast.
Now feed the lambs with some info about their queen and her new top 10.
So in the top 10 for the first time ever. So the song was released in 1994 on Mariah's Merry Christmas album. Never hit the top 10 for a long time. It was because it wasn't a commercially available single. And in the 90s, you needed to be on the Hot 100. So it was a number 12 radio hit back in 1994 when it was released, but didn't hit the Hot 100. And then didn't even challenge for anywhere high on the Hot 100 till early this decade when streaming was added to the Hot 100. It started to hit the top 40 in 2012, and 2013, 14 every year since. It's come back a couple years ago, got to number 11, didn't get any higher. And then last week it got to number 11, so the watch was on again. Could the song finally hit the top 10? And this week, 23 years after its release, top 10. So streaming really is a main factor for driving the song this week. It contributes 70% of its chart points this week. So if streaming hadn't come along, we might not be talking about All I Want for Christmas Is You being a top 10 hit on the Hot 100. We found people really like to stream holiday songs.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the most curious things I think about the development of streaming into the charts is before when people buy things, you know, through whether it's physical or digital, you know, there was no way of keeping track of how often these things were played. You could buy a record off iTunes or at the record store back in the day, and, you know, you might spin it 100 times, 150 times, but you only can register that one initial sale. So I think with streaming in particular, as you know, as I'm sure probably the downloads might be waning for the song, people are choosing to stream it instead. And, you know, I mean, it's not uncommon that you might stream it, I don't know, once a day even, or on a Christmas playlist or something. So all those plays coming together, you know, is really helping her out, as we obviously can see here.
And holiday airplay is bigger than it was in years past. In this decade, in the 2000s, AC stations began playing holiday music 24/7, more than they ever did. So that means even more plays, more audience for the song. And Mariah's Christmas shows the last few years, she's turned the song into kind of its own industry, where she's doing the residency at the Beacon Theater here in New York, which expanded to international shows this year. There's a new movie out called All I Want for Christmas Is You, a book a couple years ago. So she's kind of realized there's this evergreen popularity of the song. It now has so many offshoots to it, and it just feels like this is the total culmination of the song just growing in popularity over the years, and now a brand new milestone.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the lambs out there already itching for that 19th number one, perhaps. I mean, there's obviously a ways to go between top 10 and number one, but I mean, if evidence, maybe it takes a long time, but Mariah showed up. Who knows? Maybe
there is one more week of holiday tracking this season, so maybe it challenges for the top five next week. We'll see. The other thing is it's Mariah's 28th top 10 on the Hot 100, her first since 2009. So this decade, she adds her latest one.
But also is great. 28 top 10s. This is Mariah made her. This is her 28th year on the charts. Going back to 1990.
Well, that's right.
Yeah. So 28 for 28. There she is.
Fifth most all time. She ties Stevie Wonder for the fifth most. So Madonna leads with 38. The Beatles, 34. Rihanna, 31. Michael Jackson, 29. And then Mariah and Stevie Wonder, 28 each. So just more history for Mariah. She has the most number ones among soloists with 18. And moving up on the list for most top tens.
Yeah, and I know that Mariah, in particular, has been really excited to watch this happen around the world. I mean, even worldwide, we're seeing some of these same kind of effects with streaming in the charts. It's back to number 2, I know, in the UK, which is the same position it originally hit when it came out in 94. So, you know, to see it literally go from its debut year at number 2 all these years later and still be number 2 is, you know, something special for her. And I'm sure, in particular, hitting number 1 would be, you know, crazy. I mean, 23 years after the fact, people still streaming, people still celebrating. Like you said, she's really commercialized Christmas in a huge way for her and her fans, and they always look forward to this time of year. And I mean, it's just one of those cool things to see that, you know, a legacy artist doing legacy things.
And so many people have tried to figure out why this song has stood out above so many others over the last 20-something years. Why is this the one song that gets this attention? And even Walter Afanasieff, who co-wrote the song, he talked to Billboard a couple years ago. He couldn't even fully understand. I think a big part of it is there hadn't been a lot of new Christmas songs by really any artist. They used to do covers a lot. So when this song came out in 1994, it was sort of rare for an artist to record a new holiday song. And this is when Mariah was absolutely at the peak of her chart powers. So it was the biggest artist at the time putting out, and really, I think what is the main thing about it, putting out just a great song. I think it's just, so much of it is, it's really just that good. The momentum of the song is just so driving forward. It's catchy. There's just so many things that I think it was the right song at the right time. And maybe nothing else has really matched it quality-wise or business-wise in terms of an artist being at the right time releasing a song like that since.
Yeah, I mean, I really agree that, I mean, certainly, of course, Mariah being Mariah at that particular moment. And I know, and a lot of times people talk about, you know, interviews where she thought maybe it was too soon to do a Christmas album. But like you said, she was at the height of her powers. And that was something that a lot of artists kind of just on their decline kind of did for sort of one last gasp at, okay, well, it's Christmas, so I can at least be relevant, you know, in this point in time of the year. And for them to just bang out a classic, I mean, I know a lot of it, you know, is kind of inspired by some of the older, maybe, well.
Yeah, the Motown, Wall of Sound, 60s
yeah,
kind of songs.
A lot of the record is also inspired by some of those sounds that we know as classics today. A lot of the Phil Spector kind of sounds. I mean, we see the Ronettes, you know, their Sleigh Ride comes back every year. So right. Mariah capitalizing on that formula as well. You know, just in general, I mean, Mariah Carey put her stamp on Christmas, and she definitely deserves all the accolades and talk that comes with it.
And just one last thing on Mariah. She has a new holiday song that's on the Adult Contemporary chart called The Star, and this is one of her best vocals ever. new Mariah Carey holiday music to go along with All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Golden Globe nominated holiday music from Mariah Carey.
All right. So good week for Mariah all around on the Billboard charts this week. So we'll actually talk a little bit more holiday music coming up at the end of the podcast. But let's go to Nashville right now for our industry insider interview this week. Jim Asker, our Nashville correspondent, had so many great interviews this year with Jim. He's gotten Luke Bryan and Mike Dungan on before, Billy Ray Cyrus, Maren Morris, Ray Lynn. So kind of a little thread there with Ray Lynn and Maren. How we've talked to a lot of female country artists because it's pretty known at this point that women are having a little trouble on the country charts. Have been very male dominated in recent years. So another artist who we wanted to talk to about that, and she's actually breaking through. It's Lindsay L. So in September, she had her breakthrough album, The Project, debuted at number 4 on the Top Country Albums chart. And this week, it's kind of cool, a nice milestone for Lindsay. Criminal, her new single, hits the top 40. It's her first time in the top 40 on the country airplay charts, up to number 40 this week. So we're going to celebrate that and get her perspective on women in country. And Jim actually recorded this a little bit a few weeks ago when her single time, Waiting on You, was going towards the number 42 peak. So since then, top 40 hit for Lindsay L on Billboard's country airplay chart. So let's find out her take on all things Nashville and country right now. It's Jim Asker with Lindsay L on the Billboard Chappie Podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone, this is Jim Asker from Billboard, and I am with the one and only Lindsay L on the Chartbeat podcast today, something I've been wanting to do for a long time now.
Likewise.
Get into
hey,
the
Jim.
Studio. It's so nice to see you. Thank you so much for doing this with us today.
It's so nice to see you. Thank you for having me. I've listened to lots of your episodes.
Yeah. The funny ones.
The funny ones, the good ones. It's, yeah, I'm a fan.
And I'm a fan as well. So, I want to discuss a little bit because a lot of the Billboard readers, listeners from other genres, everybody mixes and matches now. I love that, how young people listen to everything. But for anybody who's not familiar, I just want to go back a little bit, your background, and talk about that. You're from Canada.
From Canada originally. I started playing piano when I was 6, picked up the guitar when I was 8. It became like another limb off my body pretty much. I started working with a guy by the name of Randy Bachman when I was 13 years old. So Randy is from BTO, The Guess Who, Taking Care of Business, American Woman, all those classic rock songs.
No Time Left for Me.
Exactly. Baby, just ain't seen nothing yet. I would sit in the studio with Randy, and he would play all these jazz chords up and down the neck. He learned to play guitar from Lenny Bro, who's like this crazy jazz guitarist. And I would just sit there, you know, 13, 14, 15 years old.
How did you meet Randy?
I met him through a songwriting buddy of mine.
Okay.
He'd been working with Randy, and he's like, you guys need to meet. And so I sent Randy this little demo CD I made of, like, Jan Arden cover songs and, like, acoustic guitar instrumentals. I think I covered a Tommy Emmanuel like a fingerstyle guitar song, and I put some things that I'd written, and he listened to it and he was like, this sounds like a young female Chet Atkins. I need to meet this girl. And so we got together for a couple of writing sessions, and he's like, I'm your biggest fan. I want to help you. So Randy was really the guy who taught me how to write a song. And, you know, when he was playing all these jazz chords in the studio, I was so intrigued that he was really the guy who got me listening to blues and jazz and rock.
Is Randy a country fan by chance?
He is a huge country fan.
He is.
You know, he has podcasts. He loves songwriting. He's such a great songwriter that he writes with a lot of country artists and country songwriters all the time. Just because songs are all about the message and the story. And I mean, he's done tours. I think he had a tour called Every Song Tells a Story, where he goes and tells, you know, the background of all the Guess Who.
That is so
songs.
Cool. Does he keep in touch with your career now?
Yeah, we keep in touch all the time. We wrote about a year ago and we've been trying to find a date. Like, he lives in Toronto right now. And both of us are just zigzagging around the world every day, it seems. So,
I know you've been so busy, and we'll talk about that. But has he ever popped up on stage with you in one of your shows?
Yes, yeah. We've definitely been able to play together, and I hope we can reenact that reunion soon. We're way overdue.
How old were you when you wrote your first song?
I was 10 years old.
10?
Mm-hmm.
And
it was awful. I wrote it to my parents, because what else are you going to write when
you're
10
years
old?
What was the name of it?
It was called That Place in My Heart. It was terrible.
Sing a minute. A second.
Oh
of
my
it.
Gosh.
Come on.
This is awful. I've never let this out into
Lindsay
the world.
Lindsay L., This Place in My Heart.
It goes like, you hold a place in my heart. I can't even remember the rest of it. I have it somewhere recorded.
Oh,
but
man.
It's
I wrote
so
better
sappy.
Songs than that when I was 10.
I know, right? I mean, you got to start somewhere. Can you? Gosh.
I'm kidding, because most of us at 10 are just learning how to get to the store to buy bubble gum or whatever. And you're writing songs. Did you start writing on piano or guitar first?
Guitar. I love writing on piano now. I think I kind of abandoned the piano for 10 years. I learned classical piano, and I'm so glad that I had that basis of theory as a musician nerd. Because then when I dove into the guitar world, I kind of built from that. But I abandoned the piano for a while, and now I love writing on piano almost more than I do with guitar, because I feel like I don't think about the rules. I don't think about theory. I don't think about numbers or chords. I just think about what sounds cool and what I want to say.
In your full shows, do you play piano some too, or you just...
Sometimes. Right now, we've been, opening up for Mr. Brad Paisley, and just because of our set length, I've been playing guitar the whole show. But I love bringing a piano out on the road, and anytime there's one close by, I'll definitely sit down and play a song.
You guys have done a ton of dates already, right, on the Brad Paisley tour?
We've been out on the road for 50 shows this year. It's been awesome.
You know, I just got to see you for a couple of songs the other night at one of your label, BBR Broken Bow. You are actually on Stony Creek Records.
I am.
And one of their labels, and at the Broken Bow show at the Hard Rock here in Nashville. I got to tell you, you strap your guitar on, and I was with a few of my colleagues. I said, you got to come up and watch her play guitar.
Thank you.
You kind of look like you have that stance, like a guitar god. You know, it's like
Dang,
you strap
Jim,
that
thanks.
Guitar on, and does that... do something for you, like you strap. I've heard from other rock guitarists and country that they throw the guitar on, and it does that give you something?
It's like it's go time, you know. Adrenaline starts pumping, and I just sort of, my mind moves into this different headspace. That headspace is so comfortable to me, because it's part of the reason why, like, my shoulders and my back are probably messed up, because I've played guitar for hours and hours a day for the past, 17 years of my life. And I'm just so used to having that thing next to my body, and like a piece of wood.
It's part of your body,
yeah,
almost, right?
Yeah, we're just, yeah, very much so. We're kind of connected.
So I don't play the guitar, but what kind of guitar do you play?
Right now I'm playing a lot of Strats. I started playing Les Pauls when I was little. And,
when you were four.
When I was 4 years old. It was so heavy. It was heavier than I was. But I just miss single coils. I hate to get all guitar nerd, because probably not a lot of people
what
care.
What was that you just said? Single coil
pickups. It's really hard to make a Les Paul sound like a Strat or Tele would sound. So Stratocaster or Telecaster?
I hope you don't mind. I kind of jump around with my...
Please.
It's like a regular
conversation. That's my mind.
When
Welcome.
I'm in conversation, I go from one thing to the
Perfect.
Next. So
Welcome
I kind of bounce
to my mind as well.
bounce around a little bit. But at one point, did your parents say to you, you've got to do this? Or did they say that? Or did you tell them?
It was the opposite. Yeah, I told them. I started playing shows when I was little. And, you know, I was 10 years old when I started songwriting and started playing my first set of shows through my church. You know, I'd play in the choir with my dad because he played guitar. And so I played there beside him. And all of a sudden, live shows just became my favorite thing to do. And I'd play as many of them as I could for free.
Was your dad a professional musician or just
no,
do it for
he's
fun?
An engineer. And my mom works at the university, and both of them play instruments. My dad plays pretty much anything with strings. He still has a band that, you know, they just play around town and have fun with. So music was around me ever since I was a little girl. And for that reason, my parents understood the passion behind it. But my family was super academic. I graduated high school a year early, and early was valedictorian of my graduating class.
You were?
Mm-hmm. I was a nerd.
I don't feel smart enough now
I'm
to be
I'm a nerd
doing this.
Of all parts of life.
Wow.
And my parents told me it was mandatory that I go to school. College, university, whatever I wanted to choose. So I went to business school.
Mm-hmm.
At the Haskayne School of Business in Calgary. And in my second year, I remember sitting in an accounting class being like, why am I doing this right now? Because I dedicate so much of myself to everything that I'm doing. Like if I decide to do something, then I'm 100% doing it. And you just can't take on too much.
And your mind was racing. And you
expect, yeah, that is going to be even physically human possible. And I mean, my manager and my label can say that I still fight the same battles today. But I eventually was like, I can go to school. I can take accounting classes anytime in my life, but I cannot be a musician.
And you'll go back and finish at some point.
Sometime maybe, but I just felt such a calling that, you know, and while I was going to school, I was still doing shows. I was gigging on the road. I was missing midterms and driving across Canada in my 15-passenger band van, which is my first vehicle that I would drive to high school every day in. And yeah, and eventually I sat them down and was like, Mom and Dad, I want to be a musician.
We're speaking with Lindsay L., the first single off the record, the project called Waiting on You. The record, the project, debuted at number one on the Billboard Country Sales chart. How gratifying was that when that happened?
Jim, it was such an incredible moment. As an artist, to wait the time that we need to wait sometimes to finish recording a record and then get to release that body of work to your fans, that is an accomplishment in itself. And for me, I felt like I've been waiting to release this record for 16 years. You know, I'd release singles, I'd release little tapes that I've made out of the back of my car when I was a little girl, and now to finally officially debut my first album on a record label in Nashville.
That'd be so exciting.
It was amazing, but then to see the kind of reaction from fans and have it debut as number one, it was surreal.
Have you seen fans singing your songs back to you at shows?
Yes.
What's that feel like?
It's the best high that you can ever experience. I've never done a drug in my life, but I don't even need to. I mean, that is such a feeling that fuels me through all the craziness and ups and downs and lack of sleep and, you know, crazy schedule that we go through as artists sometimes. That feeling alone, whether it's for 5 minutes on stage or a whole 90-minute show, is incredible. It's the best.
There are so many great songs on this record. Champagne is a favorite of mine, and I know it's a favorite of a lot of people. And there's just so many great, catchy songs, hooks. You wrote 9 of the songs, didn't you, on the record?
Cutting outside songs was something that was completely out of my comfort zone. I fought my team on it a lot. Just as a songwriter, it's really important to say what I want to say. But Christian Bush, my producer.
From Sugarland.
From Sugarland, as we all know and love him.
I actually saw them the other night. They played together.
Crazy, right?
Yeah.
Jim, at the CMA Awards, I didn't even know this was happening. And I text Christian, and I was like, how did you not tell me this? But I'm so happy. I've just been waiting for this moment. They need to make music again. Fans have seemed so excited for them to get back together and to now learn that it's happening.
Are they going to record, or are they recording new music?
When they said on the CMA stage, you know, they presented the award for Duo of the Year, and they were like, I even forget what they said, but they basically hinted at it. So
okay,
let's hope that it's just a matter of in the works.
And for those who don't know, the project was produced by Christian Bush. And what, did you handpick him? How did that happen?
You know, Christian is my label mate on the same team as we are. And I think it was my manager who originally brought up his name. And so we got together for coffee. And Christian and I, 3 hours later, are still talking about music and what influenced us and why we love to do what we do. And I walked out of that meeting being like, this guy's my producer. It's done. There's just a connection that you feel with people sometimes. And music is so personal, and you walk into rooms with songwriters that you've never met before and pour your heart and soul out to them, and 3 hours later you've written like this vulnerable piece of music with a stranger.
Did he know your work?
Christian and I had written once before. So yeah, we definitely knew each other. We'd played some radio shows in the past, but choosing a producer is such a important decision, especially for an artist and especially for where I'm at. You know, I've been living in Nashville for 8 years, and I feel like I've constantly been searching for an identity. You know, you come to town, especially as a musician in my case, and there's so many incredible influences, from musicians to producers to songwriters to people working at record labels, that I was just so wide-eyed and hungry as an artist that I just took it all in. And if you don't have that filter to be like, okay, this is who I am, then you can't be everything. You can't be everything to everybody. And
Was it a nerve-wracking process thinking, okay, this record is really important to me, choosing the songs that we're going to end up making the record?
Once Christian and I sat down for that meeting, it just flipped. Like, the switch just flipped, and I was like, this is fun. I get to make the record that I've wanted to make for the rest of my life and record the songs that I want to record. I wasn't worried about anything from that moment forward. It was more like, okay, how can I make the best music possible at this point in my life? How can I take like a snapshot of where I am and have it be the most honest, vulnerable representation of me? And I feel like we did that. You know, I sat down with Christian. I was like, Christian, I want to make a record that stands kind of on its own and is just cool. Like Tuesday Night Music Club, the first time I heard that record, it just stood on its own. You know, Sheryl Crow just collected songs and recorded songs in a way that they didn't really fit with other things, but by itself, it just, it was brilliant.
And I want to just touch on this briefly. Christian Bush had you record a full album for him, right? It was a John Mayer record. Tell that story really quick.
So, we called the record The Project because I feel like the past year of my life has been a science project of figuring out who I am.
Uh-huh.
And because Christian had me do little experiments along the way, it felt like that. The first experiment was him asking me what's my favorite record of all time. And I told him it was Continuum by John Mayer. I've listened to that record so much. And he's like, perfect. I want you to go record the whole thing. Your only rules are you have 2 weeks, you need to play all the instruments yourself, and you need to do it by yourself at your studio at the label. Go. So I cleared my schedule. I had to cancel things, and I cooped up in my little office, and 8 a.m. till 3 a.m., I worked around the clock, and I re-recorded my favorite record of all time, which I thought I knew, but when you need to start taking apart pieces of songs and Steve Jordan drum parts and Pino Palladino bass parts and really recreating it in your own voice, it's a process. I learned so much about.
And you did that in 2 weeks?
Did it in 2 weeks.
Played all the instruments.
Played all
drums,
the instruments. Oh my gosh.
Bass,
one
guitar,
Steve
keyboards.
Jordan measure, like one bar took me 2 hours because I couldn't figure it out. I was like, what is he doing? And it just was listening over and over and over again. But the experiment as a whole was one of the most brilliant things I've ever seen a producer ask an artist to do. It was like, take your favorite music and then put it in your own voice and listen back to that. and then see how you feel. And so I handed Christian the project after I was done. We called it the Continuum Project, quote unquote, and was like, I'm blown away. Like, I've learned so much about the way John Mayer plays guitar, about the way I play guitar, and most importantly, how I love to hear a band record in the studio. And he just laughed, and he's like, all right, it's time to do that with your own music.
That's awesome. What a great story. I'm so impressed that you play all those instruments. And so you must be pretty studio savvy then, too,
hey,
obviously,
well, I'm
right?
kind of, I told you I'm a nerd, so I love making tracks and recording. I play bass like a guitar player, and I'm an awful drummer, but it is the one instrument that I kind of want to.
Where were you when you first heard Waiting on You on the radio?
That's a very good question. I was in Nashville. I landed, had just gotten home from a radio station or a radio show, and got in my car and heard it in Nashville, in my hometown now, which was, it's a crazy feeling when you hear a song that you've written come on the radio that you're not expecting. My first time I'd ever heard my song on the radio, we had just finished dinner in Phoenix with the station. And they were like, hey, your song's coming up, because they could see the rotation or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we walked out of the restaurant. We hailed this cab to the side of the road. And we were like, hey, could you turn it on the station? And the cab driver's like, okay. So we turn it on. I'm sitting in the front seat. You know, the label and all the people from the radio station are standing around. Finally, it comes on the air, and I freak out. I'd stand up, and I'm hugging everybody and high-fiving everybody and running around the car, and the cab driver's totally into it. He's totally into it. He's, like, high-fiving everybody, and I realize the meter's running. And so he's like, we could do this for the rest of the day, and I'm great.
With all the ways to consume music, there's still mm-hmm. something really romantic and special about hearing a song on the radio, isn't there?
Absolutely. Like the dry ground.
What is it like as a former programmer mm-hmm. and being a young, talented woman who plays the hell out of the guitar and can play all these instruments and write songs, and then you go to radio stations, some aren't playing the record yet? What? Mm-hmm. How is that? What is that like? What is it like when you meet a program director who hasn't even heard the record?
I mean, it's something we've gotten used to.
Mm-hmm. Do you let it roll off? Can you let it roll off you? It's such a personal thing.
It's such a personal thing, but it's just part of doing any kind of business. And promotion's hard. And even promotion for a girl, you know, a woman artist is hard. It's just a hard thing right now.
When I talked to Maren Morris, mm-hmm. there were 3 songs in the top 40 at the time by women.
Yeah. It's so crazy.
To me is... crazy. Even when I think about it, that it's it takes that long. And I ask people all the time, I was like, what is the problem? I asked Ray Lynn about it. Mm-hmm. I asked Maren about it. What's your take on it? Why is it so challenging?
You know, I think every industry is cyclical, regardless of where you work. I feel like the music industry right now, it's a really good time for females. And I think that the quality of music that females are writing and recording and releasing is at an all-time high. And for once, I feel like the record that I recorded is who I am, and I'm proud of it. And, you know, we were talking earlier before we started this podcast, like, if I'm going to go down with my ship, at least I will sink on my own flipping ship.
Atta girl.
And that's how I feel. Like, I am so proud of this music that it's almost flipped the discussion. Like, before, I used to be so worried about getting a song up the chart. And I'm still worried about getting a song up the chart, but it is just a part of the conversation now. It's not the only conversation, because I feel like I've created an album that shows who I am as an artist. And I love playing live shows, and I love watching fans fall in love with the record. And so, yeah, getting a song on the radio is definitely something that is our focus.
And Waiting on You.
We will figure it out one of these
times.
Waiting on
You is a great song. It's a great single. It's one of those songs that sounds better every time you hear it, which is the charm of great music. It's timeless. It sounds great all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, here's a question for you that I wanted to ask. And, you know, when the Beatles were turned down by every label there was, they used to ask John Lennon what the backup plan was. And he'd say, there is no backup plan.
Yep.
Are you that passionate about it? That?
Yes, I think you need to be. People always ask, if you weren't a musician, Lindsay, what would you be? And I'm like, I'd be a musician. Because this is what makes me happy. This is who I am. And there's so many aspects of this industry. And, you know, building a career is such a beautiful process that takes time and grows into so many things that you would never have even thought you'd be able to live and go through. And so, yeah, this is me.
I was so glad to hear that you love the album because, you know, everybody, it's all consumption now.
Yeah.
And people dropping singles.
Absolutely.
And no plan for an album. I mean, Body Like a Backroads was number one.
As it should have been. It was awesome.
We're still waiting for the next single.
Yeah.
And I totally get it with him. You know, he's just, Sam Hunt is just, he's going to put one out when I guess he feels like putting one out.
Good for Sam Hunt because he's gotten to the point where he can do that.
Mm-hmm. But the charm of the album, though.
Yeah.
The historic nature of how we love albums.
Yes.
I was interviewing an artist the other day and he said, we don't need to put an album out anymore because we're just going to drop singles and not worry about an album. But do you still believe in the cohesive album and the work?
I believe in the album for me. I think for every artist, it's different necessarily. And even genres are a little bit different. And depending on what you're planning to do with a certain project, maybe a single route is a better way to go. But for me, I want my fans to fall in love with who I am. And you know, songs are a part of the story. And so making albums is a really important thing for me, yes.
Wait, and you've got an album that's chock full of potential hits.
Well, thanks, Jim. I hope the rest of the world feels that way, too.
Well, I'm a fan, but you know that song Champagne, that Jessica Biel line,
yeah.
It's such a great hook. And I have to be honest, I didn't know who Jessica Biel was until I saw the show Sinner. And I was watching, I was like, oh, that's the Lindsay
Sinner's
so
good, right? I love how that's what made you discover Jessica Biel. And that's what made you think of Champagne. That's amazing.
I work at Billboard, yet I'm kind of pop culture ignorant when it comes to a lot of things.
Whatever, you are very music history brilliant.
VIPs, like that crystal chandelier. Ain't got nothing on me. You make me feel like Jessica Biel. Stepping out of a stretch. Diamonds hugging my neck. For the paparazzi got me like I'm dropping the mic. So naturally David, just call me Aretha. For real, you make me feel like I'm the champagne.
But Champagne was a special song. I remember walking into the writing room that day. I was with Fred Wilhelm and fellow artist Walker Hayes. And
oh, he was a co-writer.
He was. Yeah, the three of us wrote it. And we were throwing around ideas and we started writing bits of that chorus. And I'm like, can we rhyme Jessica Biel with the word feel? And Walker looked at us and he was like, of course we can. Walker's not scared of anything. And his creativity and writing ability is just so inspiring to me because it's like music should have no rules. As artists and as creators, the minute you put rules around yourself is when you kind of start to live in a box. And that's not what creativity should be. You know, creativity should just be what it is and messy and brilliant and unguided. And then we have people to help us bring it back into the box and it needs to be set in.
You know what's great about it is that you might be writing about it from a personal side, but great music people can relate to in their own lives, in their own situations. And I bet a lot of women just love that song for what it says. I wonder about it sometimes when I listen. I wonder if she's singing about Bobby.
Songwriting is an honest thing. And even over the past year, I feel like I'm writing way more about exactly what I'm going through. Love it or hate it. But I think that's how fans have reacted to it so much, you know?
You know,
start to fall in love with it.
You're on the cusp of, you've already broken through. You're on tour with a huge artist and playing in front of huge crowds all the time. And I know that just because I, you know, I like people personally, you connect with people. And I felt really, like, why should your personal life be part of anybody? Why do people even care about who Lindsay yeah. L is dating? And yeah. I remember when that little controversy happened, I was like, what the hell does this have anything to do with? I mean, when we were in radio and somebody would do something, and my music director, Suzanne, and I would say to her, so I was like, what do we care? The right. listener is not thinking about that. They're working three jobs. They're driving to Walmart.
Completely.
They could care less. They just want to hear great
they
music.
They want to hear great music.
So just touching on it really quickly, what's that like for you, your personal life being examined?
As members of an entertainment industry, your life is public, you know? I mean, I put my whole life on social media anyways, and so I'm putting it out there. So the fact that people want to ask questions about it, all the power to them. I mean, I'm putting it out there. However,
do fans ask you about it when they're asking for an autograph?
Oh, for sure. And as they should. As an artist, I want to be able to share my life with you and write about it and have you ask about it. And if they're asking me about my personal life, it means they're listening to my music. And so I'm grateful for that. What happened in Sacramento, you know, I cannot get mad about anybody choosing or not choosing to play my music. That's their decision. However, you know, I was booked on a show that was promoted for months that I would play. And then I was asked the night before to not play it because of my personal life. And that's what just didn't feel right.
Yeah, and for the listener who doesn't know, Lindsay was dating Bobby Bones, who I did a podcast with. He's
he did.
Very great interview. I mean, yeah. The guy's quick as can be.
You know, he is still one of my best friends, and I wish everything amazing for him because he deserves it. He has such a great heart. He is one of the funniest people I know. And yeah.
I'm sure he deals with envy too, but you know, people who, because in radio, you know, he's on so many stations and he's so successful. But anyway, Lindsay was playing the show in Sacramento at a competing, because Bobby is on iHeartMedia, a competing station, and then they canceled it, which is really childish. But you went up and did a makeup date, didn't you?
I did, yes. We made everything right in the world. And at the end of the day, my biggest focus and the most important thing to me is my fans. And I just didn't want them to think that I wasn't showing up at a show that they thought I was going to be at, because that wasn't my choice. And so I wanted to go back there for them. And we ended up having a great show. And it was fun. I love Sacramento. Gosh, the fans in Sacramento. We were out there actually for record release week when the album, the project came out. And they already knew it. They had listened to the Instant Grat tracks, and I guess it had been out like a couple of days before we got around to Sacramento, and they were singing every word to every song.
What do you like for a fan to take away from listening to your album?
I want them to be able to identify with it. I just got back from Europe. We were there for a couple of weeks and played these little club shows in London and Cologne, Germany and Amsterdam. And, you know, it's like 200 people smashed into this little club. It's so great and brilliant and sweaty and dark. And yet they're singing every word to B-sides, to album cuts. And the culture over there is a lot less single-driven and a lot more album-driven. And people fall in love with artists and really listen to your body of work. But it is so rewarding as a songwriter and as an artist to, you know, even play in countries that can't even speak English and still learn your music and fall in love with your music and want to come to shows and sing it with you.
That is so great. And they're really passionate about it there.
Very passionate about it there.
And at the show the other night, the Broken Bow show, during CMA week, Executive Vice President John Loba of Broken Bow
yeah.
said, and I was having trouble. He was mumbling on stage
yeah.
about you being in Europe, and because Broken Bow is going international now, and you being one of the first mm-hmm. artists to make a splash over
yes.
there, right?
Yeah.
Is that exciting or what?
It's so exciting. It's so exciting. I love being able to travel around the world and play music for.
Is your music on the radio in Europe?
Yeah, we've been played on BBC Radio 2 a couple of times, as well as Chris Country, which is another country show over there. It's crazy,
it's
the
so
culture. It's
isn't it?
So different. It's so different than what we can even understand over here. You know, they have stations or broadcast networks that play music, and then they have shows that are sort of themed or genre themed. So they have like a country show, mm-hmm. And yeah, they've been wonderful to us supporting the record. I'm going over to play C2C, which is a huge music festival in London in March, and I can't wait to get back over there.
So you're still doing Brad Paisley dates? You're so busy.
Mr. Brad Paisley is probably one of the coolest people. I mean, arguably one of the best guitar players that I've gotten to tour with.
Did he know what a good guitarist you were
in the world? Gosh,
when he put you on the tour.
I think so. We got to play a couple of college dates with him when he was playing those in 2016.
Okay, so we don't have a lot of women in country who are known for their guitar prowess.
No.
Anita Cochran comes to mind, who's a great guitar player.
Absolutely.
Plays
Bonnie
the
Raitt.
Chet Atkins style. Oh, Bonnie Raitt.
Of course.
And a few others.
There are not a lot of female musicians. And I think that was one thing when Brad first met me. You know, he knew that I played, but even his crew was saying the first time that he brought me out, I forget, it was like the end of She's Everything or something. And they were like, to see that smile on Brad's face, they're like, we don't see that smile come out very often. And he was like, to get to jam with a girl on stage, that's not something that he gets to do every day, you know? And so Brad's been so wonderful to us. He's taken us in
as
sort of
their
road touring family, his crew and band, and you know, just he's such a great guy himself.
So it's Lindsay L. Brad, and who are the other two artists on?
Chase Bryan and Dustin Lynch.
Great show.
It's a great show. It's a full show. It's been so much fun to tour with it all year. And yeah, you know, you got to have a girl in there to keep those three guys in line.
Do you have any women in your band?
I don't. I really, really want to.
Lindsay.
You know, I know, right? When I first came to town, I wanted an all-girl band. But sometimes with budgets and travel schedules and playing radio shows and, you can't always get what you wish for, but it is my goal to bring some more.
Well, when
girl power.
I asked programmers, any good, decent programmer, I was having this conversation with Johnny Chang, who programs KKBQ
yeah,
in Houston,
awesome.
About women. And he said, hey, you know, I just look at the song. Whether it's a man, woman, group, I don't really care.
I love
and
that.
And so that's how you must be with musicians, too. It really.
That's true. I when I'm interviewing to, you know, see if somebody wants to come on, it's mainly about who they are first as a person. And then it's how well can you play your instrument or you do your job. Because for the other 23 hours of the day, you know, you got to live together.
What do you want to accomplish in your career? You're so young and talented and you've got this great album out. Do you think about that?
All the time. I have started making vision boards. You know, I've made them in the past, but I think it's just the season of life that I'm going through right now, and I feel like it's a bit of a whirlwind and trying to stay focused and figure out where the road's heading. And so I have like a vision board up in my bedroom, and I want to play music around the world to thousands of people every night.
Are you having fun?
I'm having a blast. It is nothing like I ever thought it was going to be, and it's so much more than I wanted it to be in the same
How
way.
Often do you talk to your mom and dad?
Not often enough. I'm terrible sometimes. I get out on the road and I'm just in road mode, I call it, and I just sort of disconnect from.
Well, you need to call
life.
Your parents more.
I know. Well, no, I'll talk. We
as
text
dad,
all the time.
I'm not a dad, but as
my mom and dad and my brother and
figure,
I are on a group text. I try to call them once a week, but sometimes 2 weeks go by and I'm like, I haven't called my parents. I probably should do that. I have the best family that a girl could ask for, and they're super understanding and supportive. And yeah, I need to call them every week.
Yeah. You know, my mom passed away a couple of years ago and she was 90. And, I still think about calling her every day because I used to talk to her, and I thought about it, and there were probably 10 days since college that I missed not speaking to my mom and dad.
That's amazing.
So I just got, but I grew up Catholic, so I'd feel extremely guilty, too.
I grew up Catholic, too, so I feel extremely guilty. But it's weird. It's like I'm such an introvert. I'm such an extrovert when I play shows, but I know
you're an outgoing introvert.
I'm an outgoing introvert. There you go. And I really get fueled and write songs and am creative by being alone.
Mm-hmm. Do your parents worry about your safety?
All the time. All the time. I'm moving to a different part of town right now in Nashville, and my mom's like been researching about this, about where I'm moving, and she always is worried about my safety.
The tragedy that we've had ongoing from every week, it seems like you turn on CNN and there's something. Do you block that out when you're playing? When you're going into a venue?
I think about it every show, actually. It's such a weird thing that one person can walk into a setting and change everybody's lives for the rest of their lives.
You're on the same label as Jason Aldean, and he was on stage, of course, when that happened in Las Vegas. Did he share any of that? Because I know he hasn't talked about it a lot, about personally what that was like. I just can't imagine.
Jason's band, Tully Kurt, Rich, and David, they were my first producers. And so the three of them, Tully Kurt and Rich, play for Jason. And I text them immediately once I heard it. And I was like, are you okay? And Kurt was like, Lindsay, it was the craziest thing that I'd ever gone through. Like, I had to hide behind a road case on stage listening to gunshots for 10 minutes. And I was in London. I was on the other side of the world. And it was so personal that it affected me it still affects me. Clearly, I can barely talk right now. And it's such a scary and unfortunate thing.
Well, I wish you safety out there.
Thanks. And, I mean, you know, the beautiful thing about country music, I will say, is we're such a family. And the CMA Awards definitely
beautiful.
Had so many beautiful tributes to it.
I was so proud of our genre that... The salute we did.
The way it opened, the Little Big Town's acceptance speech when Carrie got up there and sang, and they had everybody's pictures from everybody who's
so
unfortunately
nice.
Passed away, and then all of the victims. I was a mess.
Interwoven with Don Williams.
Incredible.
And the people that we lost. Troy Gentry. It was beautiful. It was really a beautiful tribute.
It was really a beautiful tribute, and it really goes to show that as country music, we are a family, and when tragedies happen, we do come together, and we support each other, and we love each other, and, you know.
Were you at the show?
Through it as a family, yeah. I was, I brought my roommate.
I'm going to be up there winning that Horizon Award next year.
That has been a dream of mine ever since I was a little girl, and so hopefully one day, Jim, we can make that happen.
What are you listening to right now?
I listen to everything from Buddy Guy to Hendrix to Cage the Elephant to Keith Urban's new record to...
Hey, how do you like the Keith Urban song, Female?
It's amazing.
It's great, isn't it?
It's so great, and it touches on so many issues that are timely and that mean so much to me. I mean... Kudos to Keith, man. He is not afraid of cutting real songs that say real things.
Is that Nicole singing on that song?
It is, yeah. I think it's Nicole Kidman, his wife, and then also Nicole Galeon, one of the writers.
Oh, okay. I was thinking Nicole Kidman. Man,
but they're both on there.
He adores his wife, huh?
It is a beautiful thing. I hope one day, Jim, that I can find somebody the way that Keith loves Nicole. Because they're beautiful. Their love is so beautiful. It's amazing. Even being around the two of them and watching them interact, it's just, it's perfect.
I just want to wish you well as we go out today. And the best of luck to you. I really appreciate you doing the podcast with us today.
You.
Good luck to you, Lindsay.
Thank
and
you so
see
much,
you down
Jim.
The road.
Another headache from a loud crowd Friday. Another lover throwing gravel in the driveway. Another
All right, and as we approach the peak of holiday season, of course, we gave Mariah Carey her well-deserved shout-out. Let's take a look at another song that is a perennial holiday favorite, particularly if you grew up in an African-American household. This Christmas by Donny Hathaway. One of the most sort of grooving holiday songs out there. The song, you know, Donny Hathaway, huge star, R&B star in the 70s. Kind of an interesting history with this song because it was originally recorded in 1970, put out as a single. Didn't get a whole lot of traction. At the time, Billboard had a little holiday single spotlight, and it actually made it onto that chart, number 11 back in 1972, but didn't make it onto the Hot 100. So kind of forgotten about until the early 90s. And what happened in 1991 is the song was included and re-released on a compilation, a Christmas compilation. And for whatever reason, the song, you know, that was the spark that gave it new life. And since then, it's become a very, very popular song to record. Kind of one of the things that I find most interesting about it is every year there's somebody, you know, putting out their new version, new twist, new taste on it. And in 2016, the song actually was number one on the Adult Contemporary chart, which is one of Gary's favorite charts here at Billboard, twice in the same year by two completely different artists.
Right.
So at the top of the year, the end of the 2015-16 holiday season, Seal had put out a version, and that went to number one on Adult Contemporary. Fast forward to the end of the year, and Train, like Hey Soul Sister, Drops of Jupiter, Train had recorded the song, also made it number one on Adult Contemporary. So I think that goes to show that, you know, at its core, that has to be a good song. If two acts like Seal and Train can both do it and turn it into a solid Adult Contemporary hit.
Hang on, mistletoe, I'm gonna get to know you better. This Christmas, and as we trim the tree, how much fun it's gonna be together. This Christmas, fireside's blazing bright.
Well, if you grew up in a Jewish household, you still knew the song as well. I knew Gloria Stefan's version. Hers came out in the early 90s as well.
What's the Jewish connection?
I'm just, you said at the beginning, if you grew up in an African-American household, you knew the song. So I'm just, saying, I still knew the song. I knew a different version.
Right? I mean, I get it. And the list of people who've recorded this song, you know, is a great who's who, you know, really of a lot of huge artists. So after the song was out in 1970, but before it got really popular in the early 90s, there were already renditions by The Temptations, Gladys Knight and the Pips, Patti LaBelle had taken a stab at it. Diana Ross had recorded one that was few people would know about. And then, of course, after it became popular, some more contemporary acts took a stab at it. Gloria Stefan, like you said, Usher has a rendition, Christina Aguilera, Destiny's Child, Aretha Franklin did one in the late 2000s, Pentatonix, you know, who have sort of in the Mariah vein taken Christmas and made it an annual huge traffic driver for their sales and their streams, have a rendition, Mary J. And probably one of the best known renditions, at least for the millennial kids. If you don't know the original, you probably have heard the Chris Brown version from the film This Christmas in the late 2000s. Was a Hot 100 hit, got to number 62 in the 07-08 holiday season. So like I said, I mean, kind of how we've seen so many acts take on a Mariah song as well. There are some of those other contemporary holiday favorites that a lot of acts find themselves going to. And ultimately, at its core, if so many artists can take this song, want to record this song, you know, put it out there, put their own spin on it, you know it's got to be a good, good, good song.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the fun of holiday music all around, that there's so many different versions of the same song and kind of keeps them all fresh, too. You can hear one version and a different version. Bruce Springsteen doing Santa Claus is Coming to Town and sounds pretty different from, say, the Jackson 5 version.
Yeah, and especially if you're one of the fans who, you know, sort of likes to fan army your person. I mean, that's a whole other dimension is, you know, who can sing this particular song better? Who's got the more interesting arrangement? Who's got the better vocal on it? So it just kind of adds to that fun. And you're right. I mean, it's so crazy how these songs that some of them have been around for, you know, centuries, at least decades. And every year, you know, somebody new picks it up and makes something new out of it.
And works so well. I mentioned the Jackson 5. That's going to be our second podcast this week. So that's also coming up. We're going to speak to Jackie Jackson of the Jackson 5, along with Fred Bronson, who wrote the Charpie column for many years here on Billboard. New book, Legacy, The Jacksons. It's an entire history of 50 years plus of the Jacksons, the Jackson 5. So really excited to run that this week as well. So little plug for our next podcast.
And I guess on that note, we should warm the audience up a little bit with maybe a taste of that Jackson 5 sound ahead of next week's interview with Jackie. What?
Oh, no.
Are we doing the lamb thing first?
Yeah, well, this lamb has been patiently sitting here in the studio.
Oh.
Calmly the whole time. It's purring now, all happily. The lamb's purr. I know cats purr. We said we're going to mention why Mariah Carey fans are called lambs.
Because you know they'll come after me if I'm wrong. So I'm going to say the Mariah Carey wiki site that's dedicated to Mariah has this sort of a background description on the lambs and the lamely. So it says here that the initial fan base name was supposed to be called the Butterflies. We know the album Butterfly, you know, very important to Mariah and her personal evolution in her music career, and obviously has been sort of a stock symbol since 1997 for her. It didn't work out, though, because Mariah, just as a person, seems to call people who she is close to lambs, family members, friends, and, of course, that extended on to her fans. And so it's a, you know, obviously a term of endearment that Mariah just sort of, I guess, crafted herself, and lambs refer to the lambs who are following their leader. And so, you know, that's just been, seems to be where the nickname originated from, and obviously has stuck around for a couple decades now. So one thing I found that was kind of funny, it also notes that haters or fake lambs, they call them goats.
Yeah.
So if you try to infiltrate the lamely and you're not real, you're a goat, and they'll find you out. Apparently, that's where it seems to be. Mariah's personal taste has led to this massive lamely she has.
Jackson 5 taking us out, Trevor.
Yes. So ahead of our interview with Jackie, we'll play us out with a little taste of a 1970s classic, Santa Claus Is Coming to Town.
Bye.
Santa Claus is coming.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.